The radio set crackled, and the sideband hummed. Then a disembodied voice spoke in Shona, and Captain and Bebe acknowledged curtly, and glanced across at Peter.
"It is confirmed, sir. Bada is moving north on the Karoi Road at speed."
"All right, Captain. We can go up to Condition 3, Peter ordered, and strapped on the webbing belt with his holstered sidearm.
"Do you have anything from the surveillance teams on the Tuti Road?"
Captain Mbebe called three times into the microphone and was answered almost immediately. The reply to his question was brief.
"Negative at this time, General," he reported to Peter.
"It's still too early." Peter adjusted his burgundy red beret to a rakish angle, and the silver leopard's head glinted over his right eye.
"But we can begin moving into our forward positions now."
He led the way through the French doors onto the veranda. The helicopter crew saw him, quickly dropped their cigarettes, ground them out, and vaulted up into the hatch. Peter Fungabera climbed up into the fuselage, and the starter motor whined, and the rotors began to spin overhead. As they settled down on the bench seats and clinched their waist belts, Craig asked impulsively the question that had been troubling him. But he asked it in a voice low enough not to be heard by the others in the rising bellow of the main engine.
"Peter, this is a full-scale military operation, almost a crusade. Why not merely hand it over to the police?"
"Since they fired their white officers, the police have become a bunch of heavy-handed bunglers."
Then Peter gave him a rake-hell smile.
"And after all, old boy, they are my rhino also."
The helicopter lifted off with a gut-sliding swoop, and its nose rotated onto a northerly heading. Keeping low, hugging the contours, it bore away, and the rush of air through the open hatch made further conversation impossible. They kept well to the west of the main northern road, not risking a sighting by the occupants of the Mercedes. An hour later, as the helicopter hovered and then began its descent to the small military fort at Karoi, Craig glanced at his wristwatch. It was after 4 o'clock. Peter Fungabera saw the gesture and nodded.
"It looks as though it's going to be a night operation," he agreed.
The village of Karoi had once been a centre for the white-owned ranches in the area, but now it was a single street of shabby trading stores, a service station, a post office, and a small police station. The military base was a little beyond the town, still heavily fortified from the days of the Bush War, with a barbed wire surround and slope walls of sandbags 20 feet thick. The local commandant, a young black second lieutenant, was clearly overawed by the importance of his visitor, and saluted theatrically every time Peter Fungabera spoke.
"Get this idiot out of my sight,"
Peter snarled at Captain Bebe, as he took over the command post,
"and get me the latest report on Bada's position."
"Bada passed through Senoia 23 minutes ago,"
Captain Mbebe looked up from the radio set.
"Right. Do we have an accurate description of the vehicle?"
"It is a dark blue Mercedes 280 SE with a ministerial pennant on the bonnet. Registration PL674. No motorcycle outriders, nor other escort vehicle. 4 occupants.
"Make sure that all units have that description, and repeat once more that there is to be no shooting. Bada is to be taken unharmed. Harm him, and we could well have another Matabele rebellion on our hands. Nobody is to fire at him or his vehicle, even to save their own lives. Make that clear. Any man who disobeys will have to face me personally."
Mbebe called each unit individually, repeated Peter's orders, and waited while they were acknowledged. Then they waited impatiently, drinking tea from chipped enamel mugs and watching the radio set. It crackled abruptly to life, and Timon Mbebe sprang to it.
"We have located the truck," he translated triumphantly. "It is a green 5-ton Ford with a canvas canopy. A driver and a passenger in the cab, heavily laden, well down on the suspension and using extra low gear on the inclines. It crossed the drift on the Sanyati River 10 minutes ago, heading from the direction of Tuti Mission towards the road junction 25 miles north of here. So, Bada and the truck are on a course to intercept each other," said Peter Fungabera softly, and there was the hunter's gleam in his eyes.
Now the radio set was the focus of all their attention. Each time it came alive, all their eyes instantly swiveled to it. The reports came in regularly, tracing the swift progress of the Mercedes northwards towards them, and that of the lumbering truck grinding slowly down the dusty, rutted secondary road from the opposite direction. In the periods between each report, they sat in silence, sipping the strong, over-sweetened tea and munching sandwiches of coarse brown bread and canned bully beef. Peter Fungabera ate little. He had tilted back his chair and placed his feet on the commandant's desk. He tapped the swagger stick against the lacings of his rubber-soled jungle boots with a monotonous rhythm that began to irritate Craig. Suddenly, Craig found himself craving for a cigarette again, the first time in months, and he stood up and began to pace the small office restlessly. Timon Mbebe acknowledged another report, and when he replaced the microphone, translated from the Shona. "The Mercedes has reached the village. They have stopped at the service station to refill with gasoline." Tongata Zabiwe was only a few hundred yards from where they sat. Craig found the knowledge disconcerting. Up to now, it had been more an intellectual exercise than an actual life-and-death chase. He had ceased to think of Tongata as a man. He was merely Buddha, the quarry, to be outguessed and hunted into the trap. Now suddenly he remembered him as a man, a friend, an extraordinary human being, and he was once more torn between his residual loyalty of friendship and his desire to see a criminal brought to justice. The command post was suddenly claustrophobic, and he went out into the tiny yard enclosed by high, thick walls of sandbags. The sun had set, and the brief African twilight purpled the sky overhead. He stood staring up at it. There was a light footstep behind him, and he glanced down. "Don't be too unhappy," Sally Ann pleaded softly. He was touched by her concern. "You don't have to go," she went on. "You could stay here." He shook his head. "I want to be sure. I want to see it for myself," he said. "But I'll not hate it any less." "I know," she said. "I respect you for that." He looked down on her upturned face and knew that she wanted him to kiss her. The moment for which he had waited so long and so patiently had arrived. She was ready for him at last, her need as great as his. Gently he touched her cheek with his fingertips, and her eyelids fluttered half-closed. She swayed towards him, and he realized that he loved her. The knowledge took his breath away for a moment. He felt an almost religious awe. "Sally Ann," he whispered, and the door of the command post crashed open, and Peter Fungabera strode out into the yard. "We are moving out," he snapped, and they drew apart. Craig saw her shake herself lightly, as though waking from sleep, and her eyes came back into focus. Side by side, they followed Peter and Timon to the open Land Rover at the gate of the fort. The evening was chill after the heat of the day, and the wind clawed at them, for the windscreen had been strapped down on the Land Rover's bonnet. Timon and Bebe drove with Peter Fungabera in the passenger seat. Craig and Sally Ann were crowded into the back seat with the radio operator. Timon drove cautiously, with parking lights only burning, and two open army trucks packed with 3rd Brigade troopers in full battle gear kept close behind them. The Mercedes was less than half a mile ahead. Occasionally they could see the glow of its taillights as it climbed the road up one of the heavily wooded hills. Peter Fungabera checked the odometer. "We have come 23 miles. The turnoff to the Sanyati and Tuti is only 2 miles ahead." He tapped Timon on the shoulder with the swagger stick. "Pull over. Call the unit at the junction." Craig found himself shivering, as much from excitement as the cold. With the engine still running, Timon called ahead to the road junction where the forward observation team was concealed. "Ah, that is it." Timon could not keep the elation from his voice. "Bada has turned off the main road, General. The target truck has stopped and is parked 2 miles from the crossroads. It has to be a prearranged meeting, sir." "Get going," Peter Fungabera ordered. "Follow them." Now Timon and Bebe drove fast, using the glow of his parking lights to hold the verge of the road. "There's the turning," Peter snapped, as the unmade road showed dusty pale out of the dark. Timon slowed and swung onto it. A sergeant of the 3rd Brigade stepped out of the darkness of the encroaching bush. He jumped up onto the footboard and managed to salute with his free hand.
"They passed here a minute ago, General," he blurted. "The truck is just ahead. We have set up a roadblock behind it, and we will block here as soon as they are passed, sir. We have them bottled up."
"Carry on, Sergeant," Peter nodded, then turned to Timon and Bebe.
"The road drops steeply down from here to the drift. Have the trucks cut their engines as soon as we are rolling. We will coast down."
The silence was eerie after the growl of heavy engines. The only sound was the squeak of the Land Rover's suspension, the crunch of the tyres over gravel, and the rustle of the wind around their ears. The twists in the rough track sprang at them out of the night with unnerving speed, and Timon and Bebe wrenched the wheel through them as they careered down the first drop of the great escarpment. The two trucks were guided by their taillights. They made monstrous black shapes looming out of the darkness close behind. Sally Ann reached out for Craig's hand as they were thrown together into the turns, and she hung on to it tightly all the way down.
"There they are,"
Peter Fungerbearer snarled abruptly, his voice roughened with excitement. Below them they saw the headlights of the Mercedes flickering beyond the trees. They were closing up swiftly. For a few seconds the headlights were blanketed by another turn in the winding road, and then they burst out again, two long beams burning the pale dust surface of the track, to be answered suddenly by another glaring pair of headlights facing in the opposite direction, even at this range, blindingly white. The second pair of headlights flashed three times, obviously a recognition signal, and immediately the Mercedes slowed.
"We have got them,"
Peter Fungerbearer exulted, and switched off the parking lights. Below them, a canopied truck was trundling slowly from the verge where it had been parked in darkness into the middle of the road. Its headlights flooded the Mercedes, which pulled to a halt. Two men climbed out of the Mercedes and crossed to the cab of the truck. One of them carried a rifle. They spoke to the driver through the open window. The Land Rover raced silently in complete darkness towards the brightly lit tableau in the valley below. Sally Ann was clinging to Craig's hand with startling strength. In the road below, one of the men began to walk back towards the rear of the parked truck, and then paused and looked up the dark road towards the racing Land Rover. They were so close now that even over the engine noise of the Mercedes and truck, he must have heard the crunch of tyres. Peter Fungerbearer switched on the headlights of the Land Rover. They blazed out with stunning brilliance, and at the same moment he lifted an electronic bullhorn to his mouth.
"Do not move!"
his magnified voice bellowed into the night and came crashing back in echoes from the close-pressed hills.
"Do not attempt to escape!"
The two men whirled and dived back towards the Mercedes. Timon and Bebe started the engine with a roar, and the Land Rover jerked forward.
"Stay where you are! Drop your weapons!"
The men hesitated. Then the armed one threw down his rifle, and they both raised their hands in surrender, blinking into the dazzle of headlights. Timon and Bebe swung the Land Rover in front of the Mercedes, blocking it. Then he jumped down and ran to the open window and pointed his Uzi submachine gun into the interior.
"Out! Out!" he shouted. "Everybody out!"
Behind them, the two trucks came to a squealing halt, clouds of dust boiling out from under their double rear wheels. Armed troopers swarmed out of them, rushing forward to club down the two unarmed men onto the gravel of the road. They surrounded the Mercedes, tearing open the doors and dragging out the driver and another man from the back seat. There was no mistaking the tall, wide-shouldered figure. The headlights flood-lit his dark, craggy features, and exaggerated the rocky strength of his lantern jaw. Tungata Zabiwa shrugged off the grip of his captors and glared about him, forcing them to fall back involuntarily.
"Back, you yapping jackals! Do you dare to touch me?"
He was dressed in dark slacks and a white shirt. His cropped head was round and black as a cannonball.
"Do you know who I am?" he demanded. "You will wish your 25 fathers had taught you better manners."
His arrogant assurance drove them back another pace, and they looked towards the Land Rover. Peter Fungerbearer stepped out of the darkness behind the headlights, and Tungata Zabiwa recognized him instantly.
You, he growled. Of course, the chief butcher. Open the truck, Peter Fungerbearer ordered, without taking his eyes off the other man. They stared at each other with such terrible hatred that it rendered insignificant everything else around them. It was an elemental confrontation, seeming to embody all the savagery of a continent. Two powerful men stripped of any vestige of civilized restraint, their antagonism so strong as to be barely supportable to them. Craig had jumped down from the Land Rover and started forward, but now he stopped beside the Mercedes in astonishment. He had not expected anything remotely like this. This almost tangible hatred was not a thing of that moment. It seemed that the two of them would launch themselves at each other like embattled animals, tearing with bare hands at each other's throats. There was a passion of deep roots, a mutual rage based on a monumental foundation of long-standing hostility. From the back of the captured truck, the troopers were hurling out bales and crates. One of the crates burst open as it hit the road, and long yellow shafts of ivory glowed like amber in the headlights. A trooper hooked open one of the bales and pulled out handfuls of precious fur, the golden dappled skin of leopard, the thick red pelts of lynx. That's it! Peter Fungerbearer's voice was choking with triumph and loathing and vindictive gloating. Seize the Matabele dog! Whatever this is will rebound on your own head, Tungata growled at him. You son of a Shona whore! Take him! Peter urged his men. But they hesitated, held at bay by the invisible aura of power that emanated from this tall imperial figure. In the pause, Sally Ann jumped down from the Land Rover and started towards the treasure of fur and ivory lying in the road. For a second she screened Tungata Zabiwe from his captors, and he moved with a blur of speed like the strike of an adder, almost too fast to follow with the eye. He seized Sally Ann's arm, twisted and lifted her off her feet, holding her as a shield in front of him as he ducked low and scooped up the discarded rifle from the dust at his feet. He had chosen the moment perfectly. They were all crowded in upon each other. The troopers pressed so closely that none of them could fire without hitting one of their own. Tungata's back was protected by the Land Rover, his front by Sally Ann's body. Don't shoot! Peter Fungerbearer bellowed at his men. I want the Matabele bastard for myself! Tungata swung the barrel of the rifle up under Sally Ann's armpit, holding it by the pistol grip single-handed, and he aimed at Peter Fungerbearer as he fell back towards the Land Rover, dragging Sally Ann with him. The Land Rover's engine was still running. You will not escape, Peter Fungerbearer gloated. The road is blocked. I have 100 men. I have got you at last. Tungata slipped the rate of fire selector across with his thumb and dropped his aim to Peter Fungerbearer's belly. Craig was standing diagonally behind his left shoulder. He saw the slight deflection of the rifle barrel at the instant before Tungata fired. Craig realized that he had deliberately aimed an inch to one side of Peter's hip. The clattering roar of automatic fire was deafening, and the group of men leapt apart as they went for cover. The rifle rode up high in Tungata's single-handed grip. Bullets smashed into the parked truck, leaving dark rents through the bodywork, each surrounded by a halo of bright bare metal. Peter Fungerbearer hurled himself aside, spinning away along the truck body to fall flat in the road and wriggle frantically behind the truck wheels. Gun smoke and dust shrouded the blazing headlights, and troopers scattered, blanketing each other's field of fire, while in the chaos Tungata lifted Sally Ann bodily and threw her into the passenger seat of the Land Rover. In the same movement he vaulted up into the driver's seat, threw the vehicle into gear, and the engine roared as it leapt forward. "Don't shoot!" Peter Fungerbearer shouted again. There was a desperate urgency in his voice. "I want him alive!" A trooper jumped in front of the Land Rover in a futile attempt to stop it. The impact sounded like a lump of bread dough dropped on the kneading board as the bonnet hit him squarely in the chest, and he fell. There was a series of jolting bumps as he was dragged under the chassis. Then he rolled out into the road, and the Land Rover was boring away up the dark hill.
Without conscious thought, Craig jerked open the driver's door of the abandoned ministerial Mercedes and slipped into the seat. He locked the wheel into a hard 180-degree turn and gunned her into it. The Mercedes' tail crabbed round, tires spinning, and he hit the high earth bank a glancing blow with the right front wing that swung her nose through the last few degrees of the turn. Craig lifted his foot off the accelerator, met the skid, centred the wheel, and then trod down hard. The Mercedes shot forward, and through the open window he heard Peter Funkelbearer shout, "Craig, wait!" He ignored the call and concentrated on the first sharp bend of the escarpment road as it flashed up at him. The Mercedes' steering was deceptively light. He almost oversteered, and the off wheels hammered over the rough verge. Then he was through the bend, and ahead the red taillights of the Land Rover were almost obscured in their own boiling white dust cloud. Craig dropped the automatic transmission to sports mode. The engine shrieked, and the needle of the rev counter spun up into the red sector above 5,000, and she arrowed up the hill, gaining swiftly on the Land Rover. It was swallowed by the next turn, and the dust blinded Craig so that he was forced to lift his right foot and grope through the turn. Again, he almost missed it, and his rear wheels tore at the steep drop, inches from disaster, before he took her through. He was getting the feel of the machine, and 400 yards ahead he had a brief glimpse of the Land Rover through the dust. His headlights spotlit Sally Ann. She was half twisted over the side, trying to climb out and throw herself from the fleeing vehicle. But Tungata shot out a long arm and caught her shoulder, plucking her back and forcing her down into the seat. The scarf flew off her head, winging up like a nightbird to be lost in the darkness, and her thick dark hair broke out and tangled above her head and face. Then dust obscured the Land Rover again, and Craig felt his anger hit him in the chest with a force that made him choke. In that moment he hated Tungata Zabiwa as he had never hated another human being in his life before. He took the next bend cleanly, tracking neatly through and pouring on full power again at the moment he was clear. The Land Rover was 300 yards ahead, the gap shrinking at the rush of the Mercedes. Then Craig was braking for the next twist of the road, and when he came out the Land Rover was much closer. Sally Ann was craning around, looking back at him. Her face was white, almost luminous in the headlights. Her hair danced in a glossy tide around it, seeming at moments almost to smother her, and then the next bend snatched her away. Craig followed them into it, meeting the break of the tail as she floated in the flowery dust, and then as he came through he saw the roadblock ahead. There was a 3-ton army truck parked squarely across the road, and the gaps between it and the bank had been filled with recently felled thorn trees. The entwined branches formed a solid mattress, and the heavy trunks had been chained together. Craig saw the steel links glinting in the headlights. The barrier would stop a bulldozer. 5 troopers stood before the barrier, waving their rifles in an urgent command to the Land Rover to halt. That they hadn't already opened fire made Craig hope that Peter Funkelbearer had reached them on the radio. Yet he felt a nauseating rush of anxiety when he saw how vulnerable Sally Ann was in the open vehicle. He imagined a volley of automatic fire tearing into that lovely young body and face. "Oh, please don't shoot," he whispered, and pressed so hard on the accelerator that the cup of his artificial leg bit painfully into his stump.